Ladies and gentlemen, please have your attention.
Yeah, I can't go too far.
And horrifying news story. Yeah.
Time now for the DenverSports.com.
Stoke would have done it 5 minutes ago.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverSports.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
Okay, go ahead. Now, I was just thinking of this old story. It's about a dowry and about this father who couldn't get his daughter married and this one guy that came and ended up, everybody was offering one cow. Now, listen, I've never done the dowry cow thing, right? I mean, this is old school.
Really? You never had to
offer up
a cow?
No, we didn't do that.
For one of your daughters?
So this is very old. But the point of the story was one guy decided he loved this gal, and he offered the father 10 cows. It was the most cows anybody had ever offered for a woman within that, you know, within that hamlet. And so the father was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, right? And he gives his daughter to be wed. And later on, years later, he asked the man, he goes, as this woman just blossoms and becomes this incredible person and leader and da-da-da of the whole hamlet. And he says, well, why did you offer 10 cows when nobody else was even offering a cow? He goes, because I wanted my wife to know that she was a 10-cow wife, being that she was that important to me. So my point with the draft is it important to move up in the draft to show Bo Nix that he's a 10-cow wife?
Wow. Took a while to get there, but okay.
See where I'm going?
Not really, but okay.
Is Bo Nix a 10-cow wife?
Is Bo Nix worth 10 cows? If Sean Payton thinks he is, give them all the cows they want. Oh, that was different even for us.
Yeah.
Here we go. So,
how many cows would it take for your dad, Rogue, to give you away?
Yeah.
How many cows?
How many cows would your dad want?
1,000.
1,000 cows.
Okay.
All right.
So dad's going to be very, very particular in giving you away, huh? Giving his blessing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
He's not impressed by the abs.
No.
Not like we are.
No. He's saying, hey.
More than that.
Yeah.
It's not about the
looks. Hey, ab boy, how many cows do you have?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Did not see this show taking that twist. Andrew Mason laying out Sean Payton's plan that it is now clearer after what they did yesterday, taking on 52 of Russell Wilson's $35 million dead cap figure. Mace writes, if you're impatient, understandably so, given seven straight losing seasons and the second longest active postseason drought, you might be hard-pressed to understand or accept Sean Payton's plan. But it is clear, as Mace writes, using this offseason and the coming season to reset and retrench while absorbing a team-wide dead money figure of over $67 million. Yeah, if you look at the other dead cap hits, Randy Gregory, for example, it adds up to $67 million of dead cap. So, does it feel like this is clear, that it is a rebuild, a reset, a hitting the pause button for 2024?
Yeah. It also feels clear now, based on them not getting a veteran free agent quarterback, and the other ones that are available at this point are no different than the guys you already have there, that it definitely feels to me like a first-round quarterback is the direction you're going. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it feel like you've got your eyes on one of these guys, and we're going to run with that guy. That guy's going to, maybe week 5 or 6 or whatever, there may be a bridge, you know, maybe Stidham is the bridge, but eventually that dude is going to take over and he's going to get 8, 10, 12 games in under his belt as your cap opens up next year and you'll have that, you know, quote unquote, valuable experience. Does it not feel that way?
I'm not ready to go there yet. I mean, in terms of drafting a quarterback, But yeah. In the first round? Because if you don't have the draft capital to move up and go after one of the big four, let's say. Okay, and I'm going to label the big four as Williams, Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. So I don't think that Sean Payton is... Now, maybe it just so happens the quarterback he covets is Bo Nix. And if that's the case, awesome. You know, the guy you covet the most could be the one that ends up sitting there for you. But if Nix is the last quarterback standing and Sean doesn't love him, I don't think he takes him. I don't think he's going to force the issue.
Oh, no, I agree with that. I agree. He's not. I'm saying it feels to me like...
Then he turns around and drafts maybe a quarterback in the second or third round. But
it feels to me like he's got his eyes on one guy.
Well,
that's what it feels
like. Here's what I think. We can debate that. Here's what I think is clear. There's only one more quarterback coming on board.
Should I just text him and say, dude, tell me what you're doing with quarterback position?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're texting Michael Malone and...
Dude, what's the deal?
What's the deal? Come on, Sean.
Come on.
You and me.
I won't tell anybody.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. This is just from my own curiosity.
Right.
I'm dying to know.
Complete confidence.
Come on. I had your back during Bounty Gate. I was the only guy on ESPN that had your back during Bounty Gate.
That's how we became friends.
Okay, then. You know what? He owes you one. And it's time for you to collect.
He doesn't really owe me one. No.
Come on now.
He doesn't.
Come on. He was being ostracized by the NFL world, and only Mark Schlereth stood by him.
That's a true story.
Okay.
That is a true story.
It's like the mob days. You know, someday.
But I didn't do it.
Someday I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to have a favor.
I didn't do it to get
time
a favor, though. I did it because it was true.
Okay. Well, still. You did him a solid. He owes you a solid.
Yeah, he's taking care of me over the years.
I know. Mace points out, by the way, the Broncos have roughly $120 million of cap space already for 2025. That's even with Wilson's number for next year.
Yeah.
So they are going to be in a position to do something significant next year. The question that we've been asking Broncos country this morning, we have talked about the idea of a rebuild for years, but now that it actually is here in front of your eyes, how do you feel about it? Let us know on the Ramoslaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Again, Field Yates, who was out at Bo Nix's Pro Day in Oregon, is going to be joining us here coming up in about 5 minutes. The Nuggets beat the Heat again. You can get the complete recap of the game from Jake Shapiro at DenverSports.com. They have beaten Miami 12 of the last 13 times they've played, including 8 straight in the regular season. And what was impressive about the 2 wins over Miami this year is they were low scoring. They were grinded out affairs.
Mm-hmm.
In which the Nuggets, you always hear, you know, you want to make sure that you dictate the style of play. You don't want to get dragged into playing the other team's style of play. You hear that all the time. But in the 2 games against Miami, Nuggets actually did get drawn into Miami style. And guess what? Handled it just fine. And as Malone said after the game, hey, you want to win another championship? You got to be able to play all styles. And we just showed that again.
How about their ability to just take over fourth quarters, by the way?
It's remarkable.
And what happened to, by the way, what happened to Nikola Jokic?
What do you mean, what happened?
He only had a double-double, you know, 12-point double-double. He only had 14, he only had 6 assists. What's wrong with Nikola?
Bam Adebayo's a good player.
Is he? Did he just elevate himself over Nikola Jokic for the MVP?
I don't know. Let's ask Stephen A.
Where Stephen A. have more on this?
Wendy's on right now. Maybe Wendy's is going to start talking.
That was the greatest 88-point loss that I have ever witnessed. That 88, but scoring 88 in a loss. Greatest one by Miami I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, no, Wendy. Jokic, it was one of those games where Jokic said...
Jokic, the thing about Jokic is he does what he has to do for his team to win and has no qualms about it. He's not worried about, you know, well, I got to lead the league and, you know, I got to lead the league in points scored or I got to, what do we need tonight? We need 12 for me? Okay, I'll give you 12. We need 32? I'll give you 32. Love it.
You know what's amazing about Jokic and amazing about the Nuggets? We try to come up with all these different superlatives to talk about them. Last night, they went on the road and pretty convincingly handed Miami a 100-88 loss, right?
Yeah.
There were five players who took as many or more shots than Nikola Jokic did last night.
Really?
Yeah. Jokic took 8 shots. Gordon took 11. Porter took 16. Murray took 14. Caldwell Pope took 9. Reggie Jackson took 9. So, yeah, 5 players took more shots than Nikola Jokic did. And the Nuggets on the road beat the Heat in a finals rematch. If that doesn't tell you, A, about Jokic's ego, and B, if that doesn't tell you something about just how balanced the Nuggets are, I don't know what does.
You start batting, it's easier, you know.
Yeah, just a mere double-double for Jokic. 12 points, 14 rebounds.
Exactly.
So, that's what's going on at the Denver Sports front page. You can check it out, denversports.com. All kinds of content there. You can check out what's going on with all the Broncos stuff. The Avs, they get the win last night. No team is more clutch in coming from behind than the Avalanche. Check this out real quick. The Avalanche, let me make sure I have Brendan McNicholas, the PR maven over at the Avs, is so good at this stuff. So the Avs had their 21st comeback win last night. That's tied for the NHL lead. It's the third time they've overcome a 3-goal deficit. That's the most in the NHL this season. Their 8th multi-goal deficit overcome, tops in the NHL. And check this one out. They made NHL history last night. Proof that you can bend the stats any way you want to try to find a first time ever. But hey, it's the first time ever. First time in NHL history to have 3 games in a season where they trailed 3-0, but allowed no goals the rest of the way and came back to win. The Avs have done that 3 times. First time in NHL history.
Has it all been on a Wednesday night, though?
And all on the road, even more impressive. At all Dallas, at Toronto, last night.
I'd like to know what nights they came
Vancouver.
On.
Vancouver. Field Yates of ESPN, he's an FOS, a friend of Stink.
Yeah.
And he was out at the Oregon Pro Day the last couple of days, taking a look at Bo Nix. And we wanted to learn more about Bo Nix, so we got Field Yates on. He joins us now. Field, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
No, we're doing great, Field. Always good to hear your voice. So tell me what just the overall thought process and the overall feel of the pro day of Bo Nix that you were at.
Well, I think you probably align with me on this thing. I try not to put too much influence or too much, I would say, credence into what takes place during the pro day, right? We all know the stories of quarterbacks that have looked like $1 million on their pro day, and then they have gone on to unsuccessful careers in the NFL. So for me, I wasn't necessarily as focused in on Bo Nix and how proficient he was as a passer. He threw 68 passes, 62 of them were completed, 3 more were dropped. So I guess you could say there were 3 of 68 passes that weren't perfect by Bo Nix, which is what you'd expect, right? I mean, this is a guy who last season completed 77.45% of his passes. That's the best single-season completion percentage in FBS history. But I wanted to learn more about the kind of influence that Bo had on that Oregon program for the past couple of years and how that might translate to the NFL level. And I had an idea of how Bo was regarded, but it was reinforced and strengthened over my time in Eugene of just how much of a leader he was for that program and just how much he commanded the respect of every tentacle of the Oregon football program and really the Eugene community. So I think that it's fair to say the leadership and the football character of Bo Nix is going to be very, very appealing to NFL teams over the next 5 or 6 weeks, whatever it is, until the NFL draft.
Field Yates of ESPN, join us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Okay, then, Field, you know where I'm going with this. When you look at Bo Nix and you hear people talk about Bo Nix, do you get a Drew Brees vibe at all?
I mean, there are certain traits that I think you could say are fair to sort of see. You know, when you squint, you see some Drew Brees in him. Let's talk about the accuracy, because accuracy can be divvied up into a few different ways, right? There is the raw completion percentage, which I just referenced, which I don't think is the entire story, but when you set the single season completion percentage mark in the FBS, you know, we've been playing college football for a long time, it's at least an indicator that you are a very accurate quarterback. So Bo definitely has accuracy on his side. He's not a small guy. I think some people might think of Bo Nix as this like 6 foot quarterback, which obviously Drew was, or Drew might have been 6 foot on a good day. Bo is, you know, 6'2", maybe 6'2.5". So he's a well-built quarterback with some size. He's a better athlete than Drew was. Drew obviously navigated the pocket perfectly. I mean, one of the great in-pocket mobility quarterbacks of all time. But Bo was a legit running threat. They just didn't use him that much during his time there at Oregon. He was like this razzle-dazzle quarterback during his days at Auburn, which included starting as a true freshman in week one for Auburn, the first quarterback to do that at that program since 1946. So Bo's played a ton of games. He's the most experienced FBS quarterback ever, started the most games by any quarterback in the history of the FBS. So there are some similarities to Drew, but you know, I just don't want to go overboard on making comparisons to for a 23-year-old to a guy who was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Well, the Broncos sit at 12, and they haven't dipped their toe into free agency at the quarterback position. They're going to carry the whole $53 million of dead cap on Russ as they've moved on from him. They sit at 12. Is there a chance that Bo Nix might be their guy? Would they have to move up? I mean, what whispers are you hearing about how people feel in the NFL about Bo Nix and where you might be able to get him at if you decide to draft him?
Yeah, I'm using a little bit of what I'm hearing, Stink, and a little bit of what history has shown us as well, is that quarterbacks are going to go faster than maybe your overall big board rankings would tell you they should go, right? So if I were to say that Bo Nix was the 12th player taken in the upcoming draft, I would say that's also not in line with where my overall big board ranking has him. But look at the circumstances. As of right now, we're talking on, March 14th at 8:20 Mountain Time. The Broncos' depth chart is very thin at quarterback, and the options available to them amongst veterans is also not particularly inspiring. With no second-round pick as well, the Broncos might be saying to themselves, if we don't take Bo Nix at 12 or a quarterback at 12, we don't know that we're guaranteed to find a starter anywhere in the draft that can come in and give us the opportunity to compete for the playoffs right away. And I whether this is totally realistic or not, I think it is partial, at least realistic in my vantage point. Like, Sean Payton wants to make the playoffs next season. He wants to be in there. He wanted to be there last year. He made that very clear. So I left the Bo Nix Oregon Pro Day thinking to myself, Bo Nix is going to go to the pre-draft visits, which are oftentimes the first time that some coaches, not all, but some coaches, get the chance to meet these prospects, because obviously they're not on the road during the season, and so few teams are sending large contingents of coaches to the combine anymore. And I thought to myself, he's going to make so many coaches such big fans of his because the football intellect is exceptional. He told me after the pro day that the trait that he thought maybe could most sell NFL teams is his processing. And that certainly shows up on tape. It's not just being able to put the ball accurately where it's supposed to be, but also knowing in a fast period of time where it's going to go, which can create run-after-catch opportunities. So I do think that Bo has a pretty clearly defined set of skills, and I do think that's going to appeal to a lot of teams. And if you told me he goes 12th to the Denver Broncos, I would say, I buy it.
Field Yates of ESPN joining us. And Field, in the NBA, it's almost like teams stay away from college seniors. It's because, oh boy, they've been in college so long, they've reached their potential. In the case of Bo Nix, 5 years in college football. We were talking about Michael Penix. Was it 6 years in college football? Do you get the sense that the long time spent in college works in a quarterback's favor in the NFL, or is it looked at as a potential red flag?
I would say it's neither, is what I would say. I would say that it's like, in the sense that, like, I don't think we can categorically say it's one or the other, because people better get used to this. I mean, obviously the COVID year bought all the kids that were in college football during the 2020 season an extra year of eligibility. But this past year alone, I'll just use one school, but there are a lot of other ones. Ohio State had like five guys that I had already written up with my 2024 scouting report that ended up returning to school, including a couple guys in JT Tuimoloa and also Emeka Ogbuka, their wide receiver, who could have been first-round picks. Like, that's the landscape we are in now, because the NIL money is obviously a factor. So while I get it, you know, I think everybody in a perfect world would love for a team to draft a quarterback who spent exactly 3 years in college and he's 21, he's got the potential to play for 20 years in the NFL. I just don't think that's the landscape that we're going to be in anymore, because I think that so many players are going to have a different calculation about staying versus going in college. And the last thing I'd say is that, you know, like Joe Burrow, 23 and a half when he declared for the draft or when he was drafted by the Bengals. They obviously have no regrets about that. And Kirk Cousins, who I think is 34 now, just got a four-year extension, or four-year deal, I should say. So quarterbacks are getting paid well into their 30s more than ever now. So to me, the age is not a major concern.
All right, 30 seconds or so that we have left. Handicap your quarterbacks. Who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on your big board?
Number one, Caleb Williams. Number two, Jaden Daniels. Number one and two players overall on my board, Drake May, and then J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, and I think five could go in the first 12 selections.
Okay. All right. Hey, Field Man, we appreciate you, buddy. Have a great day.
Yeah, guys, look at that snow out there. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Out of it. Yeah. Absolutely. Field Yates and FOS, a friend of Stink from ESPN, join us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Up next, did yesterday's big move with Russell Wilson and the dead cap answer the biggest question surrounding Sean Payton? That's next.
Ever since we got Xfinity, we have Wi-Fi all over the house, even in my hiding spots.
Ha! Found ya.
How?
That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. Now through March 21st, get started with 200 megabit internet for $25 a month for 2 years with no annual contract and get Wi-Fi equipment included. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing, auto pay with stored bank account. Restrictions apply. Taxes and fees extra. After promo, regular rates apply to internet service and Wi-Fi equipment. Actual speeds vary.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' Big Story of the Day.
Funny, it's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big, big, huge.
Asking the question to Broncos country, taking the temperature, crack the lane. Now that a rebuild certainly seems to be happening right before our eyes, we've talked about it for years, but now that it's happening, how you feel about it? On the RamosLaw.com text line, rebuilding's fine. 8 years of quarterback problems. We need a plan. Another one. Rebuild. As a season ticket holder since 1988, any drastic measures to clean out the stench of Elway's GM decisions after 2015? It's about freaking time. Paul in Inglewood. Another one. Knowing that this is a rebuild mode is 1,000% better than having false hope with Hackett and Fangio. All right, so far people are on board. Love the rebuild, way overdue. I would be perfectly fine with them trading Sertan to move up and get a real quarterback. About time for a rebuild. It's 5 years late. About freaking time. Okay, so if you are against the idea of a rebuild, if you think it doesn't need to be that way, or we should not have ended up in this position, let us know. RamosLaw.com, text line 303-713-1043.
By the way, I really like Field. And Field's got a great background, by the way. You know, he was a college football player at one of them smart schools, I think. Like one of the smart guy schools, like, you know, Brown or Yale or Harvard or something like that. So he's got a football background. He was a safety, I believe. And then he was a scout. You know, he's a scout for like the Chiefs and stuff.
I did not know.
Scouted
that
for a long time. And then he went into television. He looks like he's 14 years old still to this day. But he's been doing this for a long time. He's one of those guys that I really respect. I respect his work ethic, but I respect his knowledge. So I've always enjoyed Fields' stuff. Yeah, but smart guy. I don't know where he went. One of them, what's his, like Brown's a smart school? Colgate? Is Colgate a smart school?
Oh, yeah.
Colgate.
There's like real Ivy League schools, and then there's like schools that are like second tier Ivy League schools.
Like what would be some second
tier? Like Colgate. But no, I think he went to an Ivy League school. Didn't he go to like Columbia or Cornell or something like that?
Let's see. I know he played football.
Oh, Wesleyan College.
Oh, is that a smart school?
That's a smart school. That's like Ivy League light. It's like a D, yeah, it's like
Yeah, it's like an Ivy League school.
Sometimes I don't have a popcorn maker and I don't use microwave. I just put it right in a pot with some of that Wesleyan oil. Put some Wesleyan oil in there.
Yes.
And just pop up the corn.
It's great. Oh,
gosh.
Wesleyan oil.
I love it.
You trying to give me an oil, really? It's not going to happen.
No.
So did the moves yesterday, the big move.
Uh-huh.
And taking on 52 million of the $85 million cap hit that they owe for Russell Wilson. Did it answer a question that was out there surrounding Sean Payton? Because one of the questions about Sean was, is he in this for the long haul? Is this a guy who is going to come in here, give it 2 or 3 years, and if it doesn't work out, bail and go back to TV or try to go somewhere else? Is he up for a rebuild, or is he just going to come in and just kick the can down the road and keep slapping on Band-Aids, just an attempt, a desperate attempt to win right now? Tell me why I'm wrong. Mark, Sean Payton answered definitively yesterday that he's in this for the long haul with the Denver Broncos. Tell me why I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong, because he's willing to go through a rebuild. You're not wrong. By the way, you know what? When I got in this morning, because I got in early, there was a text waiting for me that apparently, you know, we do our Stinky Truth podcast, and it basically said that, me saying that I think it's preposterous that people think that Sean tried to sabotage Russell Wilson. It's ridiculous to me. Apparently, Roddy White, remember Roddy White?
Yeah, receiver with Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently, Roddy White took umbrage with me on X or Twitter or wherever you want it.
He's not a Payton fan, right? Sean fan?
Apparently not a Sean Payton fan. Whoa, you all right, big fella? What happened there?
I got a little, somebody talking.
Did you get emotional with the cow talk and cow vow?
No. You know what happened?
What?
Somebody's talking about my guy, Sean Payton.
Oh, and you got a little.
And I got a little upset.
You know,
because I stand with Sean. Somebody asked
Sean
a question.
Sean would be a 10-cow coach, right? Because you gave up a first-rounder for him?
Right. The dowry for Sean was significant.
Was it a first and second rounder?
Yeah. It was significant. The dowry.
The dowry
it was
for
10
Sean.
Cows. So, somebody.
How about the dowry for Russ?
Somebody asked a question. Somebody asked a question. Good question. Sean likes to say that. Good question. Somebody asked a question. It's a fair one. Well, why should we trust Sean Payton with a rebuild? If the Broncos are indeed in rebuild mode, why should we trust Sean Payton? Does he have any history of doing rebuilds? Actually, he does. He has extensive history doing rebuilds. His first year in New Orleans came after the Saints had, just a run.
They had a three-win season the year before.
Right. They were 3-13 the year before he took over. So, 2006 starts the rebuild. He jumped out of the gates, went 10-6, which was kind of the outlier. Then he went 7-9, 8-8. So he spent time, 3 years, rebuilding the Saints. And then they took off, and the first year that his rebuild came to fruition, they went 13-3 and won the Super Bowl. And then he had a string of double-digit win seasons. But then in 2014, he went 7-9, 7-9, 7-9 over a three-year span. Okay, rebuild again. He did it and then went 11-5, 13-3, 13-3, 12-4.
Yeah.
So he actually built up and rebuilt the Saints twice. So he's done this before.
Right.
That doesn't guarantee success here, but at least he does have some history with it.
I'm just really quick.
And by the way, those 3-7-9 seasons, for the whole argument, this is something that I've always... that's always bugged me is, Sean's just a byproduct of Drew Brees. Well, those 3-7-9 seasons between 2014 and 16, Drew Brees was the quarterback for all three of those 7-9 seasons. So why didn't Drew magically carry the team to 10 or 11 wins by himself?
Right. This is interesting. You know, that you talk about that first year, that draft. In 2006,
Reggie Bush, Roman Harper, great player for them. Jari Evans, great player for them. Rob Ninkovich is the one that kind of got away. He always talks about Rob Ninkovich, who became a really good player in New England. Zach Strief played for a very long time. He's now the offensive line coach. And Marcus Colston. So, I mean, you know, when you're doing that and you put some drafts together that end up having, you know, really solid players playing in those drafts, you have that chance to kind of do that reboot or that retool, if you will. You guys need to go back and listen to yourselves. You have just said you take a number of different quarterbacks in the first round. How is that any different from the take a quarterback, pick any quarterback Hall of Fame five approach? I haven't said I would take any of these guys. I continue to stress that the quarterback success or failure rate of these guys that go in the range where the Broncos are picking, 1 through 12, over the last 20 years is 80% failure. And we've got the 2018 class that had Sam Darnold bust, Baker Mayfield bust, Josh Rosen bust. The only one of the quarterbacks that was drafted high that succeeded was Josh Allen with the team that drafted him.
Correct.
I don't care about Baker Mayfield's relative success now because the goal is not for the Denver Broncos to pick a quarterback that fails here and then goes on to succeed somewhere else. Right. It's not like Broncos country is going to be like, yay, we got that one right.
Right.
And then you got this most recent 2021 class where Zach Wilson's going to be on the move. Justin Fields is going to be on the move. Mac Jones is already on the move. And who's left? Trevor Lawrence has been there. So far.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not. None of these guys. I'm not planting my flag for any of these guys.
Correct.
My point is that I have enough belief in Sean Payton that if Sean identifies a guy, then I know in my mind that Sean loves this guy. And if Sean loves that guy, I'm okay with that guy. Because I also know that Sean Payton's not a draft any quarterback.
Right.
Give me any quarterback, pick one. He's going to pick one.
I will promise you that Sean might have three guys that he likes. But I promise you Sean will have one guy that is his guy. One guy that's my guy, and that's where I want to go.
Well, to get to these Roddy White responses to you.
Did Roddy?
He went after you. Mentioned you by name.
Oh, did he? How come I haven't seen any of this? Wow, you got a lot of Roddy White stuff.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to that. Roddy White, former Falcon wide receiver, a Rusty, calling you out. Next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Time to hit the hardwood, brought to you by Papa Murphy's. As the Nuggets get it done in Miami, 100-88, just surgeon-like precision in the fourth quarter. But what made this win unique, and the wins just continue to accumulate for the Nuggets, so how does one win stand out from another? Here's what made this one unique, because it revealed a lot about the Nuggets culture, right? That hard-to-define sports term, culture.
Sure.
And the Heat, they love to brag about their culture. They put it on their uniforms, right?
Right.
So what's the Nuggets culture? Well, I think we saw it on display, and I'll let Michael Malone describe it. If you were watching the game, fourth quarter, you noticed that Reggie Jackson and Christian Brown were in the game and stayed in the game maybe a little longer than you'd expect a couple of bench guys to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let Michael Malone explain.
The funny thing is I had Jamal Murray and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at the scorer's table during that stretch. And this speaks a lot about our group. Both those guys said to me, Coach, let Reggie ride. Let CB ride. This group is playing well. And, you know, part of our culture, because we do have a culture in Denver as well, part of our culture is being selfless, getting over yourself.
I can't tell you, and I'll let you take it because you would know better, but I can't tell you how rare this is in professional sports. Rare in professional sports to have this kind of attitude where guys are like, yeah, no, you don't need to put me in, coach. Let these guys go. They're doing great.
Yeah. There is a, I always say this, what regardless of what I'm doing, you know, whether it's here or you're out speaking, you know, publicly, you've got an event, you know, some corporate event or whatever. That culture of being a servant, of selflessness, that is ultimately what makes you a great team, way beyond your talent. And when you've got a culture, you know what you have to do to maintain that culture? You have to work on it every day. It's not static, it's alive. And you've got to work on that culture on a day-to-day basis. And if somebody doesn't match or meet your culture that you're trying to establish on a day-to-day basis, guess what? Regardless of how talented that guy is, that guy does not fit. This is why I get so passionate or get so upset when I, you know, see Jerry Jeudy, you know, and you got that, well, I guess I got my cardio in today. And you shut up. Shut up. If you're called to run secondary routes to open things up for somebody else, you know what you do? You run secondary routes and you're glad, you're happy to do it so somebody else can get some shine. So, yeah, I just don't, like, that's why, you know, we Broncos, they're not talented enough, they're not this enough, they're not that enough. You know what? Tough enough, mentally tough enough, they're not selfless enough. And that's why things have got to change.
Yep. But it's rare. And what the what the Nuggets have going on right now, man, is a fan treasure, because this kind of chemistry, this kind of culture, it is rare. Extremely rare.
You know who the Nuggets wouldn't have won a world championship with? Melo. You put Melo in his prime on this team, and this team isn't as good. It drops this team.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You know why? Because that ball that we see popping around, moving around,
dies.
Would have got stuck. Would have gone into the black hole and never come out.
Right.
We'll have some more from Michael Malone. Good sound. Good post-game sound from Michael Malone. We'll have some more of that coming up in just a few. I got to get to this. Wow. Former NFL player on former NFL player crime here.
Okay. Lay it on me.
By the way, wrapping up Papa Murphy's... hardwood segment there, brought to you by Papa Murphy's, home of Take and Bake Tuesdays and $5 Fridays. So Roddy White was a 11-year receiver in the NFL, all with the Atlanta Falcons. Really good career. Really good player. Had over 800 catches, almost 11,000 yards, and 63 touchdowns. Playing for the Falcons all those years against the Saints in the same division. So he definitely knows a lot about Sean Payton and his time with the Saints. So, Roddy White, not only a defender of Russ, but a critic of Sean, and in the process came after you. So, here you go. Some tweets from Roddy White as he just went off. Here we go. Sean Payton, time has passed him. Bye. Doesn't matter who he gets in the draft. Drew carried that man. And he ain't done nothing since. Went on to say, dude, that Broncos roster was really good probably 2 years ago. Now it's dismantled by a man that time has passed him by. Man, yelling at Russ like his resume is better than Russ's. Last time I checked, Russ went to 2 Super Bowls, not 1. Russ's winning percentage better. I don't want people to think that because he coached the Saints and I was a Falcons player that why I'm saying what I'm saying. I just watch the games because I'm a fan. Your job as a coach is to put the players in the best position to make plays, and he didn't do that. Then I got to hear Mark come on live TV and lie to the world to protect someone who's going to be fired in 3 years. He's going to blame it on the cap and the roster, which he tore apart, traded away all the good players to rebuild.
Alrighty then.
Roddy White.
Well, first off, with all due respect, now I'm going to bash him.
Yeah, right? Now you got all due respect out there.
Well, with all due,
The game has passed Sean Payton by. He took a year off and did television. The game passed him by. A guy that took Jameis Winston, who came off a season where he threw 30 TDs and 30 interceptions and had 39 turnovers and went 5-2 with that same guy. They couldn't bring Tampa over 500. And he threw 14 TDs versus 3 interceptions. Oh, by the way, what, a year and a half later with the same players, Tom Brady comes in and wins a Super Bowl? But the game has passed Sean Payton by, right? How about the game has passed Russell Wilson by? How about that? I mean, that's just, nothing he said I can take seriously because he doesn't. He's not paying attention. He's not studying this film. You know, you claim that I'm shilling for Sean Payton. You're shilling for Russ.
Yeah, let's deconstruct some of this a little bit. This roster that was really good was dismantled by Sean. Really good? Really good.
Stop the cap.
Really good. This is a roster that over the 6-plus years before Sean took over was 40-70.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Broncos' record, 40-70 in the years leading up to Sean Payton taking over. So that's not really good.
Right.
Let's see. What else here? Your job as a coach is to put the players in the best position to make plays, and you didn't do that. Well, I would argue that if you compare what we've watched over the last few years to what they did this year, they won more games. If you compare Russell Wilson his first year to Russell Wilson this past year, Russ looked a lot better. So I would say that he actually did put the players and Russ in the best position to go out and reach their potential. And then the part that bugs me is the whole bit about that Drew carried that man, and he ain't done nothing since. So while I always believe that when you're talking about the great coach-quarterback relationships, I'll always put the importance of the quarterback over the coach.
Sure.
But I'm not just dismissing the role the coach is playing. Because right. If you're going to do that, and this isn't the first time we've heard Drew carried Sean Payton. Okay. If you believe that, then you have to be consistent. Joe Montana carried Bill Walsh. Troy Aikman carried Jimmy Johnson. Peyton Manning carried Tony Dungy. Ben Roethlisberger carried Mike Tomlin. Tom Brady carried Bill Belichick. And yes, John Elway carried Mike Shanahan. If you want to go down that road, okay, you can do that, but you have to be consistent and acknowledge that all these other supposed great coaches were simply carried by their quarterback as well. If you're prepared to do that and be consistent, then hey, I'm cool with it. But you can't just say, well, Drew carried Sean, and in all those other cases, the coaches carried the quarterback.
I just think it's foolish. So why has the game passed Sean by? I mean, that's the biggest cop-out. Andy Reid is older than Sean Payton. Has the game passed Andy Reid by? That just is, it's foolish. So he yelled at Russ on the sideline, good. Because I guarantee you, Roddy Whitespin yelled at on the sideline. And you know what he didn't do? Tuck his tail between his legs and just sit there and start to cry on the inside. I guarantee you, Roddy White stood up for himself. I don't even know what that means. That's ridiculous.
Stop
just
it.
Stupid.
Get some help.
Up next. The Avalanche made NHL history last night. Kind of a, you know, roundabout way to kind of twist the stats a little bit. It doesn't matter. They made NHL history last night, and we'll tell you what they did next.